Hey, an NFL divisional round preview. Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Shots and Tenier NFL podcast for Thursday, January 15th, 2026. I'm Aaron Schatz. I am the DVOA guy from FTN Fantasy. He is Mike Tenier. You know him from his Substack at miketenier.substack.com. You can ask us questions if you are watching live on YouTube at 11 a.m. Eastern, which is what we do on Mondays and Thursdays, to be tweaked in coming weeks because, you know, we're getting to the end of this thing. But before we talk about the four very good divisional round games, let's talk about John Harbaugh to the New York Giants. Now, I like this a lot, and especially because I think the Giants are the team that is most likely to take a leap next year. And they just got themselves a guy who we think is a good coach and an offensive coordinator in Todd Monken, who we think is a good offensive coordinator, to help them make that leap. Obviously, there's, you know, major holes on the roster they have to fill, but they have a quarterback. They have a great number one receiver. They have edge rushers. What do you think?
This is the smartest thing the Giants have done since 2013. I don't know. This is the smartest thing the Giants have done in a long time. I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around. I have to take the Giants seriously rather than just clowning them all the time. Because you're right. Great head coach, comes packaged, bundled with a really good offensive coordinator and all of the things you said. Right now I'm thinking like it's a 50-50 chance here that they leap right into the playoffs and a 50-50 chance. The thing that worries me about those guys you mentioned right now is the can they stay healthy factor of Dart, Neighbors, Scadabo. I'll throw Andrew Thomas in there. Yep. But this is light years better than the typical Giants in January where we're talking about the coaching move and they're going in and they're announcing their fourth choice as opposed to grabbing the number one guy on the
right.
On the
they board. Need, I mean, you know, I don't know what their cap situation is, but they probably have room for free agents. It would be good to add to the secondary. It would be good to add to the offensive line besides Thomas. You know, they'll do a draft, but that they're good. Andrew Daly says the Giants went 7-10 in Pythagorean this year. They left a lot of meat on the bone with chokes. Yeah, they were a better team than their record. Yeah.
Right. And even you bring Neighbors back and you put him in the equation, you probably go to nearly 500 right there.
Bill Houston wants to know which coordinator most deserves a head coaching shot. I would say Brian Flores, except he's already had one, and there's complications because of the lawsuit and because of what was his relationship with Tua Tagovailoa. And I'd say of the guys who haven't had a shot yet, people would probably mostly say Jesse Minter.
That's a good one. That's a very good choice. Yeah, I wrote about Flores yesterday, and I included something that hasn't gotten a lot of attention, Ryan Fitzpatrick talking at length about Flores's years in Miami. Remember, Fitz was there. Okay. He was talking about how many people he alienated, reminding us that he went through four different offensive coordinators in 3 years that like longtime defensive assistants disappeared and all. There are reasons besides the, well, you know, the lawsuit, which is a big deal, obviously. So when you look at all that, you understand why Flores is not on that short list. I think Minter is an excellent choice.
Sean Ryder wants to know how coaches factor into Dave. Dave is, of course, the rating that I use now for like being predictive. Early in the season, it includes the preseason projections. Late in the season, it's basically just weighted DVOA with defense and special teams dialed down a little bit. Coaches don't, there's no special coach variable except that in the preseason projections, I consider, do you have a new coach?
Right.
Because if you have a new coordinators with a new system, you tend to take a step back, all other things being equal. Now, of course, all other things aren't equal. Usually, if you have a new coordinator, you were bad the year before, and the power of regression to the mean is stronger than the power of new coaching. But that's the only thing that I include in there.
There's no, you got a marquee coach.
You have a marquee coach. No, I mean, the thing that I'm looking into in this offseason is going to be, does there need to be an extra variable of you have an experienced marquee quarterback? It's clear from the first game we're going to discuss that Vegas takes that into account. That Vegas does not just take into account how good you've been this year, but they take into account who is your quarterback and does that quarterback have strong strong experience. And that's the reason why Bills versus Broncos, this is our first game of the divisional round, which is at 4:30 on Saturday, is only Broncos by 1.5. And for the first couple of days, some books actually had the Bills favored, even though the Broncos were the better team during the regular season.
One thing you'd have to ask, and that's what you will probably be checking on, is it predictive of performance or is it predictive of the market? And are the books putting Josh Allen in there because the public is putting Josh Allen in there and they're trying to work a market, not the actual result of the game.
But I mean, that was one of the reasons why the Chiefs were so high in Super Bowl odds for much of the season.
Right.
Is that there was just sort of this, well, they have Mahomes, it'll come around a little bit kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And this is number 9 in weighted DVOA Bills versus number 6 Broncos. Although there's a little bit of hot air in the Broncos because of Trey Lance in week 18. And there's a few interesting trends.
Wait a minute. Time out. Didn't the Bills get the Jets?
Yeah, but I mean, that's the Jets. That the Jets, the adjustments for the Jets are huge. I mean, the Jets adjustments for the Jets are huge all year. The Jets sucked all year. The Chargers, it was just one game.
Okay. I got you.
But you don't take out playing the Jets because everybody played the Jets. The Jets were always really bad. So I mean, I guess Brady Cook is worse.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking in my head. Like the Jets actually managed to deteriorate during the year, but you're right.
I mean, the Chargers just had a really awful game. I mean, even for the Jets, they had a really awful game against the Bills backups in week 18, but there's not that much hot air in there because the Jets sucked all year. So, you know, you played them and they sucked, and they sucked when the Patriots played them the week before, you know?
Fair enough.
Broncos run defense has declined a little bit. 15th since week 10, but their pass defense is as good as ever. And the Bills have declined on offense, both pass and run, but not as much as it looks like if you take out week 10 against Miami. Right? Week 10 against Miami was so incredibly bad that it looks like the Bills are much worse from week 10 to 19. But in reality, a lot of that is just week 10.
At the same time, that's the reminder that the Bills blow a flat tire every 6 weeks or so. And it's just, if you take that one out, then you have to take the Falcons one out. And it's like, you can't take out all these games.
Right. And that's part of the problem with the idea of the Bills as I think in the market, they are currently the AFC favorites.
Right.
And the problem is, do you trust this Bills team, this year's Bills team, to play well for 4 straight games?
Right.
It's not individual games. It's not, can the Bills beat the Jaguars by 3 in a close one, or could they beat the Broncos even in Denver? It's, can they not lay an egg for 4 games?
Right. These guys have a critical miss on a 1 or a 2 and they roll their 20-sided die. They're going to be rolling it 4 times.
Yeah. So you've got to figure out how to avoid that. Andrew Daly says you need to run on Buffalo was screaming at the Jaguars to run more. And yes, the Bills' run defense was worst against man blocking, 5.7 yards a carry, and outside zone, 5.1 yards a carry.
Okay.
And the two concepts of run that we have the Broncos using the most are man blocking and outside zone.
That's a problem.
So that would be a problem for the Bills. And I know, you know, R.J. Harvey wasn't spectacular this year, but everybody runs on the Bills. So why wouldn't R.J. Harvey be able to? You know, people are like, there's no great running games left in the AFC to face the Bills. Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, if they play the Texans, Woody Marks is going to run all over them. If they play the Patriots, Stevenson and Henderson are going to run all over them. If they play the Broncos, Harvey's going to run all over. They're just going to, that's their run defense is just bad.
You just have to commit to it. And the Broncos are generally good at committing to it.
The Bills defense is here's an interesting one. They use 2 high safeties more than any other defense besides the Vikings.
All right.
And they are much better pass defense when they use 2 high safeties.
All right.
Second with 2 high, 29th with one high.
That's wild.
And Bo Nix is much better against one high than two high. So that would suggest the Bills should go two high all game.
Right.
Except, what does it mean to go two high? It invites
more running game up the middle. It made more runs up the middle and things like that. Right. So it's a pick your poison. Do a little injury report since you are mentioning the safeties and the run defense. Jordan Poyer is unexpected to play. He's hurt. Damar Hamlin might come off the injured reserve to replace him. There's a familiar name. Ed Oliver might return from IR to help the run defense. This is a little bit of a long shot. It sounded a little bit more like he could be available later.
Yeah, and Oliver's also more of a pass rush guy than a run defender at defensive tackle.
That's true. They need guys, though. They need guys in there. He's only played three games this year. As most people know, I think Gabe Davis and Tyrell Shavers now have ACL injuries. So three ACL injuries.
That's a big deal. The Bills are down to three receivers on the actual roster. That's it. Khalil Shakir.
Yes.
Keon Coleman and Brandon Cooks.
Yes,
otherwise, they're going to be picking up Mecole Hardman off of the practice squad.
Mecole Hardman might be elevated to return kicks. Curtis Samuel has been practicing again. Oh, boy. Don't get too excited, folks. And finally, Josh Allen, quote, honestly, I feel better than I have the last few weeks, which makes you wonder how he felt the last few weeks.
Yeah, Josh Allen is Josh Allen. He's not.
Right.
I mean, that's not the problem with the bit, right? That we all know it's not that Josh Allen is on his own, right? I don't like when people say Josh Allen does it all on his own. Because James Cook is good, and that offensive line is very good.
Yes.
But Josh Allen is – if Josh Allen has been off, I haven't really, you know.
It's more all the – I'm more thinking all the hits he took in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
He took a bunch of hits, and people are concerned about his health. And he's downplaying any idea that he's less than 100%.
Another matchup thing, by the way. Josh Allen, sixth in DVOA against zone, 25th against man. That is not a Josh Allen stat. That is a receiver stat.
That's a receiver stat.
The most man coverage in the league, Philadelphia, followed by the Denver Broncos.
Right, because you have one outstanding corner, outstanding linebackers, and other corners who might grab a little bit, but do their best to go out there and play physical and trade paint.
RJP8 says, as a Bills fan, I was hoping that a healthy Michael Hoyt would improve the run defense. I just wanted to get in a superfluous Brown University reference.
You get these Brown guys who actually like come in and pretend they're not Brown guys to mention Michael Hoyt.
Andrew Daly says, eye test told me that Bo Nix improved in the second half of the season. I think that he's the same. I think the numbers are the same. He may have improved like from the eye test, but I think the numbers are the same in the second half of the year for Nix. Their pass offense didn't get better.
No, their pass offense didn't get better. He's in the eye of the beholder sometimes. It's how much you're excited by the occasional deep shot at all of those lateral passes.
Yeah. Personnel has some interesting stats. The Broncos may want to go with heavier personnel more.
Okay.
As the Bills were 10th in DVOA against 11 personnel, but dead last against 12.
Run it.
And 30th against 21. And a lot of that is the run, right? Teams are in 12 and 21 when they're running the ball.
Yes.
If they do have a fullback, I think it's Adam Prentice.
I believe that's who it is. They do use him pretty frequently as a lead blocker and sometimes receiver.
And the Broncos are the Bills are also more successful as they move into heavier offensive packages with the two tight ends. But the Broncos are better on defense against those packages.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a matchup that they would love to say, oh, we're going. I mean, you're the Bills. You don't have any receivers. You kind of want to run the ball. I think the Broncos have an answer to that.
The Broncos are now favored by 1.5.
This is where I have to land on you got home field advantage for a reason. And I know the schedule was softer and I know the offense is sort of station to station, but you earn that for a reason and you had that rest and you have a very clean injury report, very clean injury, Broncos injury report. And all of those things add up to overcome like my perception, which is, well, Josh Allen's going to do this thing and the Bills are going to be back in the AFC Championship game. And all that has me leaning towards the Broncos.
Yeah, I would say the same thing, which is I would favor the Broncos because 1, home field, 2, the bye week, and 3, the wide receiver injuries for the Bills.
Right. Right. It's those are all factors. I mean,
yeah, those are, I mean, if the Bills are not going to have a lot of guys, like even Kincaid, is limited.
Yes.
So they can go 12 plenty to try to deal with the fact that they don't have a lot of wide receivers, but Kincaid was limited, so I don't know how 100% he is.
Right.
I would favor the Broncos, but certainly will not be shocked if the Bills win this.
Right. And this could be a low scoring game, in my opinion.
49ers at the Seahawks, 8 p.m. This one is a rematch, of course. The 49ers won in week one, and just 2 weeks ago, the Seahawks won 13-3. The big story here for the Seahawks is the way that their pass offense has declined in the second half of the year. 18th in pass offense from weeks 10 to 18. And it doesn't matter because their defense and special teams are so good.
Yes. And that's not allowed them to pull away in games. And frankly, it looked like despite the score in week 18, they pretty much outplayed the 49ers in that
game. Felt like it was more than that. It felt like the 49ers were just never going to score. Like, I mean, even though it was 13 to 3 can sometimes be a larger difference than 13-3 sounds.
Right.
Because the three is so desperate.
Right. The three is, it's a three. Oh my goodness. My curtain just fell. Excuse me. 13-3. And the three means we never got past midfield, for example, or we had like a half dozen sacks, things like that. Some good news on the Niners injury report though. Obviously Trent Williams is back already. He was back last week. He was not available for the Seahawks game. Ricky Pearsall was limited, but back at practice, which will give another weapon to Brock Purdy. Obviously, they've got other issues on offense, but having Pearsall back would help. Also, D. Winters at linebacker is practicing again, another guy they've been missing.
And Fred Warner is practicing.
Yeah, but
Brian Knowles said he saw the video and he felt like Warner could come back, but I doubt that he will, but it would mean a lot if he did.
All the conversation says NFC Championship game if they get there. That's the signaling. So unless that's rope-a-dope, you go with the messaging.
Seahawks somewhat susceptible to tight ends, but only 29 yards for Kittle 2 weeks ago. And, of course, now there is no Kittle. It's Jake Tonjes.
Right. So that's a shutdown right there. Go ahead.
There's less. I feel like there's less to talk about in this game than there is with Broncos and Bills, because the Broncos and Bills are very evenly matched, and there's all kinds of interesting matchups. And this one, it's just, look, the Seahawks defense is so good, and the 49ers are so injured.
Yes, that's right. That the entire conversation, and I've done three radios on this, is, well, do you trust Sam Darnold? It's like, I don't think I have to.
No. Do you trust? I feel like, I mean, yeah, the 49ers could win, but I feel like, do you trust Sam Darnold is the question when they play either the Rams next round.
Right.
Or whoever they play in the Super Bowl.
Right.
If they play the Bears next round. Because against the Bears, if the Seahawks play the Bears defense isn't good enough for you to worry about that either. That's not to say that the Seahawks will automatically beat the Bears, but what's good about the Bears is their offense, which we'll get to.
Right, that could be a shootout situation, though. So could you trust him in a shootout with a secondary that gets a lot of turnovers? Yeah, that's a question I might ask. But when it looks like you should – I mean, again, the Eagles would have won if there was any competency on the offensive coaching staff. I think there's competency on the offensive coaching staff in Seattle, and they should be able to run the ball, control the clock, and get into a position to win similarly to how they won in Week 18.
Here's another stat, by the way. 49ers defense uses a stacked box less often than any other defense in the NFL this year.
Do they have eight guys?
So, yeah, Seattle's run defense, run offense without a stacked box since week 10, 7th. Their run offense has improved a lot in the second half of the year, and they've been good if the other team doesn't stack the box. The 49ers don't stack the box. They don't have any linebackers anyway.
Right.
Everything points very heavily to Seattle. The line is Seahawks -7.5, and the system picks the 49ers. Okay. I feel like the Seahawks are going to win this by two touchdowns.
I do want to point out one more thing on the injury report, is that Charles Cross, the left tackle of the Seahawks, limited in practice, has a new knee injury. He had a hamstring injury. And his backup, Josh Jones, is not practicing. So there is an X factor here. Watch out to see if it's a third-string left tackle. if it is a third string left tackle, I might lean on the Niners to at least cover, because then you get the Darnold is getting pressured by Bryce Huff or whoever. If not, it sounds like Jones or Cross is going to suit up for this game, then I'm really comfortable with the Seahawks.
Let's move to Sunday. We'll start at 3 o'clock. This is the most important game of the week because I'll be there. Texans at Patriots. Yeah. Last played last year in Drake May's first career start.
Oh, wow.
Texans won 41-21.
That's a little different.
But May had three passing touchdowns, and the Texans defense was really good last year too. Mm-hmm. The Patriots defense was not.
No.
So 41-21. Texans pass offense has improved a lot in recent weeks. They're 10th.
Sorry, what? We had a little bit of a mix of it. Were those May touchdowns or were they Brissetti touchdowns when the game was out of hand?
No, one of them was May, the throw. Okay. The throw that made everybody in the press box look at each other and go, holy crap, this is the guy. Hmm. It was to Kayshon Booty for 40 yards at the end of the first half. And okay. We all looked at each other and went, the quarterback position is solved. Like from one throw, basically. We were all like, yeah, he's the guy. Yep.
Yeah.
So they were real Drake May touchdowns. Absolutely.
Okay.
The Texans pass offense, those ratings do not include bad snaps.
Oh, God, yes. But the bad snaps.
But it's not like that's a thing that always happens to the Texans. That has to be randomness from that game. That's not like they're not like the Cardinals from 2 years ago where it was right. Like bad snaps like over and over and over again, week after week after week.
Right, and the Packers had bad snaps a lot this year when they changed centers. But I was concerned that maybe it was a crowd noise thing. It looked like a crowd noise thing a couple times, which is something to keep an eye on this week.
I was looking for weaknesses for the Texans defense. Mm-hmm. I found three weaknesses.
Okay.
Number one, they are only 18th against the pass on third down.
All right.
That's a surprise. Now, normally that's a third and long, so the fact that you're only 18th is okay because I'm comparing third and longs to other third and longs, and it's harder to convert a third and long. Second, they are the second worst defense against scrambles. By the way, the worst defense against scrambles this year was the Bills, and Bo Nix likes to scramble too.
Yes. But
Drake May had 5 carries for 38 yards last year against the Texans.
Yeah.
They allowed 9.2 yards per scramble. If you can get away from the pass rushers to scramble, they allow a lot of yards.
Can I contextualize this a little bit? Because I pulled the scramble numbers. These are scramble numbers. Mahomes, 7 for 59 yards. Herbert, 5 for 41. You remember how Herbert scrambling hurt the Texans? I don't either. Ward had 3 for 33, Cam Ward, 3 for 33 and 2 for 22 in his two games, 3 total first downs. Don't think the Texans were too worried about that. Trevor Lawrence, 4 for 33 in one game, 1 for 10 in the other. Baker Mayfield, 3 for 33 with 3 first downs. You know how Mayfield scrambles head first. Knicks, 1 for 25. Matt Jones, 3 for 23. Riley Leonard, 2 for 20. Josh Allen, 3 for 15. And we all know how Josh Allen really had a fun night against that Texans defense. So that's a little – I mean, I get it. I get the numbers. It doesn't sound like –
I think the idea is you add it into the idea that Drake May will play well or not well, but, you know, average if you – you know, once you consider the Texans defense.
Or the rest of the time,
you add in some scrambles and that's a little bit of extra juice.
Or it's Mahomes and he has 7.
And I was desperate to find weaknesses in the Texans defense. It's hard. Here's the other one. Both of these teams are worse in the red zone than they are the rest of the time on both offense and defense.
All right.
Which is not a very useful weakness for the Texans because it's also a weakness for the Patriots offense.
Right. So it's week on week. And that's, I think, a little bit of the Texans. The running game is not.
Andrew Daly says, are the Texans super elite at limiting the Patriots' random 60-yard explosive runs? I think their run defense is good all around. I don't think they allow a lot of explosive runs, if I remember correctly.
They're good at stopping things in general.
I also wanted to look up. So, you know, I said this is by far the best defense that Drake May has faced this year.
Yes.
Right. Drake May has not faced any of the top eight defenses in pass defense DVOA. This is the first time he will. Mm-hmm. The Texans had six games against top 10 offenses.
Okay.
And these were the average stats. 19 for 31, 229, mm-hmm. 1.3 touchdowns, 0.8 interceptions, 2.8 sacks.
Yes.
So maybe not that many picks, but those are pretty good stats against top 10 offenses, although yes. that does include Mac Jones, not Brock Purdy.
Right.
And it includes Riley Leonard for a game. Although right. Riley Leonard was shockingly good against them in week 18.
Right. I don't remember that game to know how much of that was a thing.
Yeah.
The other side of the ball, the big thing is Nico Collins.
Yeah, that was going to say the injury report. The big deal is Nico Collins and Christian Gonzalez both being in concussion protocol, which means either they're both going to face each other or they're not going to face each other, or one of them is going to get to play, the other one's not. And I have no idea which of those things will happen.
As of now, it's leaning towards, remember Nico, he's in his second concussion protocol of the season. Those tend to take longer. He was a do not practice. So there's alarm bells going off in Houston.
Yes, Gonzalez was limited with a no contact jersey.
Yes, yes, which means he's trending towards playing. You know, they don't need Gonzalez necessarily on the field. Obviously, he helps. If you don't have Nico, then he's out there covering somebody like Xavier Hutchinson, and it's almost like gravy on that side. Also, Trent Brown, right tackle, did not practice. One reason you see
neither did Morgan Moses for the Patriots, their right tackle.
That's true. In fact, both right tackles, him and Munford, were out. They probably moved Vidarian Lowe over. He's been playing a lot this year. One reason the Texans' offensive line looks like that is because it's five different guys every week. So I'll hear people like the experts talking about, well, they can't handle stunts. They can't handle stunts because it's five different guys every week. There's always one or two new faces out there. And if people are starting to stunt, that's probably going to cause some kind of confusion along the way.
Stroud, I mentioned this stat in last week's show. On deep passes since week 10, 65% DVOA with 12.6 yards per attempt, and that doesn't include the two deep passes to Kirk last week.
Right.
And the Patriots, this is interesting, used zero coverage more often than any defense other than the Raiders and sucked. 10.6 yards a play. It's a small sample size.
Right.
But don't do that.
I can't help but think they used a bunch of zero because they were goofing off against the Jets and against Quinn Ewers.
I have to look at what, you know. Right.
Against these guys, we can kind of run these things and let guys tee off or whatever. I wonder if that's what you're looking at. And then you get burnt a couple times and you're like, oh, well, we're never going to do that against a real opponent.
The Patriots do want to blitz Stroud, though. Yeah. He was ninth in DVOA without a blitz and 22nd with a blitz. The Texans do not want to blitz May.
That line, and he doesn't move well.
Because Stroud does not move well, no.
No, they don't usually have to blitz anybody except when they... No, he doesn't move well. He did look skittish last week, again, for big chunks of that game.
The Patriots are favored by 2.5. And it's going to be cold.
Texans.
You do like
the Texans. Oh, yes, the temperature. Sorry, I have the other game up. I do like the Texans. Snow showers, so be careful driving, Aaron. High of 35, low of 18. It will be cold. That will favor the Patriots. I think crowd noise will favor the Patriots. I'm still leaning Texans, although if Nico Collins were playing, I wouldn't be leaning Texans. I'd be hammering Texans.
I'll be honest, I'm kind of leaning Texans too. I obviously would like the Patriots to win, but this is significantly the hardest defense that they have played this year. And I just don't know how good they're going to be against this defense that is so good at all three levels.
It's that old joke about how you learn to catch a bullet in your teeth. Like they toss a couple bullets at you and you catch them in your teeth. And they're like, this one's coming in a little bit faster. And they point the gun at you. This is the gun getting pointed at the New England Patriots offense.
Yeah. I did mention last week, by the way, it didn't happen with Gainwell, but that you can get plays on To'o To'o. So I wonder if they do get like Henderson or Stevenson on To'o To'o, will they get some plays that the Steelers didn't get?
They were trying. Yeah. They were trying to get on To'o To'o. I saw him getting the ball out in the flat to Kayla, to Gainwell, to Warren. It's just there's only so much you can do when your quarterback is out there going,
All right, let's hit the second game for Sunday. This is a 6:30 Rams at Bears. Rams second in weighted DVOA. Bears 10th because they had gotten better late in the season, but it did kind of slow down a little bit. Mm-hmm. So the big thing we've talked about a lot here is Stafford in the cold.
Yes.
I did go and look up. I don't feel like Stafford for the Lions in the cold means much.
Right.
And by the way, he was good in the cold with the Lions.
Right.
His one game under 32 degrees since coming to the Rams was against the Jets in 2024. 14 of 19, 110 yards, one touchdown, one interception. The question I think is less how cold it's going to be and more will there be precipitation?
Yeah, because usually when we say cold weather Stafford, we're talking about bad weather Stafford, because a lot of the games we're talking about the snow and rain. When you pointed that out, I looked at the temperature last year in Philly. It was 34 degrees, but it was nonstop slush.
Right. And also that, I mean, was an amazingly good defense. You know, some of why he struggled in that game is because
he played very well at the end of that game. It was that. Right. And also one of the things I try to point out, it's not just Stafford. It's the Rams. Okay.
Right.
When they start dropping passes, when they look sluggish coming off the line of scrimmage, I don't know if that whole team is phenomenal in bad weather, precipitation, ice cold.
I think there's going to be a lot of running in this game.
I think so, too.
The Rams and Bears were number one and number three in adjusted line yards, both near the top of the best adjusted line yards figures of all time. The Rams were 20th on defense. The Bears were 29th.
All right.
The Rams, this is fun. The Rams were last in the NFL in penalties, but had 9 last week.
Right.
The Bears were near the top of the league in penalties and had 2 last week.
Right. And penalties are such a randomizer most of the time. It's one thing to say, well, we worry about the Broncos because we know there's a guy who's going to commit pass interference. But that whole Rams thing where they had so few motion penalties, I'm not sure that's going to be sustainable. Again, bad weather, crowd noise, et cetera, against an opponent like the Bears.
The Rams' overall defense went from 3rd in the first 9 weeks of the season to 11th, if you include last week, since week 10.
Right.
And Andrew Daly points out the Rams are allowing almost 315 pass yards a game in the last 6 games. So, you know, Caleb could have a game here.
Secondary is vulnerable.
Yeah, the secondary
is vulnerable.
The cornerbacks are not good. The cornerbacks for them are not very good. They're just not. That's the weakness of the team. In fact, I think that's why I think Chris Shula did a good job this year is because, yeah, they've got a good young defensive line, but he got around the weaknesses of the linebackers and the cornerbacks.
Right. I don't think they're that weak at linebacker. It's Forbes and Durant and a lot of, like, talent tools guys that you can see make mistakes and don't match up well against certain types of receivers.
Some other stuff I took out. Oh, these are the top 2 defenses in the league on 3rd and long, including the Bears, interestingly enough.
Top 2 defenses on 3rd and long.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Oh, I bet the Bears have a bunch of turnovers. I bet you that's
probably weird. That's why. Yeah.
Right, right.
Rams' young defensive line is a really great matchup against that great Chicago offensive line that they rebuilt this year. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
I do have an injury report there. Left tackle Braxton Jones, who's been, I believe, on IR, it was a full participant. That's important because rookie Ozzie Trapillo, who's been starting in the second half of the year, is hurt. They were at danger going down to the third stringer. They had their third stringer out there for a couple of plays last week. It looks like Braxton Jones can come out there. That's a veteran who can get the job done at left tackle. The Bears injury report overall is really good. They're really excited. Roma Dunze, DJ Moore were limited. Both of them are going to be out there. And CJ Gardner-Johnson, concussion protocol, was a full participant. He's somebody who can help with their, I think we've mentioned
their slot defense was very bad this year against slot receivers, and it was much better with CJ Gardner-Johnson than without CJ Gardner-Johnson. Yes.
Right. And he can help with Puka in the middle of the field. He can help with, like, Parkinson and some of that 3 tight end stuff because he can come up and be the big slot guy and give a little bit of a matchup opportunity there.
I would watch out for Stafford deep. Stafford led the league in DYAR on deep throws. Bears were 21st in DVOA against anything 16 or more air yards.
Right. And go ahead. Stafford will be playing with the sprained index finger, remember.
Yeah, I have no idea how much of a sprain that is, right? Is it like a real effect? Like a week later, sometimes it's like after the game, things swell more. So it's going to be worse a week later. And other times, it's going to be fine a week later, you know?
Right. I don't know if I want a sprained finger when it's 2 degrees, but maybe I'll just make everything numb. Won't matter.
The line is Rams -3.5.
So tight. So tough.
I kind of like the Bears to cover.
Okay.
And I think that they can win this.
You or the system? What's
the system likes the Rams.
But you're feeling Bears cover.
I'm feeling the Bears. Yeah. Maybe it's the weather and precipitation thing. Maybe it's just the feeling of the Rams that while they were so good when they were good, then they would have those games where weird things happen and they just don't feel like they're as good as their DVOA.
Yeah, I'm leaning with you, and we're both leaning against the system, which probably means we're both wrong, but I'm leaning with you.
Yeah. Before we go, Bill Houston wants to know our thoughts on Mike Tomlin stepping down.
I was surprised.
Yep, me too.
I think it's going to be probably better for both parties. The change might do everyone good. I mean, Tomlin sounds like he's taking a year off, but then he'll still be able to write his ticket when he feels like it. I'm wondering how the Steelers progress now. I wonder what it looks like. Looks like Omar Khan is staying. Looks like that same front office structure is staying. I need to see more of who the next coach is. I need to see who the quarterback is before I can even guess how they're going to navigate.
I mean, this is their chance to take their medicine.
Yeah.
This is the opening to rebuild.
Yeah.
I know no one likes to say we're rebuilding, but this is the opening. It's a bad quarterback draft. Right? Only the Raiders are going to get a good quarterback now because of Dante Moore not coming out.
Right.
The Steelers need a 2-year rebuild here. They need a rebuilding year and then a draft a rookie quarterback year. And it's going to take a little bit of time.
Right. And it could be a chance to shed a little salary, bid farewell to some of the older veterans hanging around the interior defense, et cetera. No one likes the rhetoric. They hate the rhetoric there, you know, in that front office. But the rhetoric is one thing. The real politic is, maybe they look at this and say, we're going to refresh everything and bring in a coach who's willing to accept that. Yeah.
All right. That does it for today. Thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. And we will be back Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern to review all these games and get into the conference championships. Oh, my God. Like, we're getting to the end of this thing. It's hard to believe there's only 7 games left.
Yes. Unbelievable.
He's Mike Tenier. I'm Aaron Schatz. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the games, and we'll talk to you on Monday.